Hello, everyone. This is Joe Hilger here today at KM World, and I have the good fortune of talking to John Lewis of SearchBlock Software. Welcome, John.
Thank you. It's a great honor to be here today with you.
Yeah, well, it was fun to see you at KM World, and I'm excited to learn more about SearchBlock Software and really share it with our listeners. So let's get started. Give me the elevator pitch.
Well, the short elevator pitch depends on how many floors you have, right? So we make search simple. There's one floor. What do we mean by that, though? So all of it comes down to relevancy. At the end of the day, people want to know if they can search and find stuff. So what are all the components to go into that? So it's actually a pretty long list. And ultimately, it's about one of the things that we found is that since I'm the author of a book called Story Thinking, so that's how I think and apply a strategy of a search journey. How do you picture people moving through a search journey? They're looking for something. And imagine that they would go into, let's say, a library and walk up to the person that's there and ask for something. Well, depending on what they're looking for, relevancy may be the journals or magazines because they're looking for something recent. So you send them over there. Or it may be reference material, like the map is the map and so forth, the dictionary. Or it may be something that it may not be recent, but it's something that is still the right answer and it was printed 100 years ago. So you'd send them in different directions. So the idea of relevance ranking, the search engine should be able to be easily set up to handle, you know, situations where you would weight date more importantly than other things at certain times versus other factors. So that's kind of how I think about findability working and relevancy. If you think in terms of it not just being a single answer, there's different ways to think about the content and the question, the query, and put those together in a way that solves it in that way.
You know, John, I love that you talked about the journey. And too often you hear people talk about the journey of the website, but search is a journey as well. Not only helping people find the right information, but how they get there, how it feels, and helping them with what they do with it. And it sounds like that idea of that journey is really something that SearchBlock specializes in and is sounds like it's a differentiator. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, it's like any other topic. You can talk about it purely from a mathematical or technology standpoint, or here's the code. But ultimately, it comes back to maybe a philosophical approach. You know, how are you thinking about it? Is from an end user's perspective. It's not usually, if you watch people, you search the, where they come in, they type something, get their answer, and it's done. It's more of a journey. And they're looking for one thing might lead to something else. You have to also figure that sometimes they know what they're looking for and they want to go right to it. Sometimes they don't really know what they're looking for. So you have to account for those situations as well. So how do you take a concept or something where that's kind of related and bring up things that say, this is related to these other things, and then they go, okay, that's what I'm looking for. So you have to account for those. Then you have to say, well, search engines originally were built to find documents. So relevancy is based on what's the title, how many words are in there, just some basic things. But if it's a long document and you're asking a question, that document's not even going to come up, much less bring you that answer right out of that document. And so I think that I see it as a pretty exciting time for search because search technologies have kind of gotten to a point where they have maxed out what they're going to do without looking at NLP, AI technologies. But we have some really cool models that are operating now that we've embedded to make it easy for, when we say, you know, make it simple, also for people installing. It's like, you don't have to go out and learn AI or anything. It's all built in. So you can say, here's an example. Just looking at the idea that a lot of people that create content, it's good content. They're writing the words right. There's no English or whatever language they're writing in. But they're not thinking in terms of how would someone find this document. They're not thinking about what's the metadata, if they have any on there. Even the title, which you weight, you know, significantly, like that's the document name. Does it match what I'm looking for? And if they're thinking in terms of how they think about it and not how most people maybe would look for it, that's a problem. And up to the point of including documents where there's no title. So you find some places you go and they go, yeah, here's a couple thousand PDF documents. They don't have a title. Or they have the same title. Or they have a title that's a date. You know, that kind of thing. So you find content that's just, it starts with the content. If you can't fix the content on the way in. So one of the aspects of using NLP technology is saying, on the way in, you know, we have this idea of ingesting documents. As it comes in, you're just indexing it. But what if you look at it through the lens of NLP and say, does it have a title? Is this the best title? Can we kind of do a quick summary, look at what's in there, and have it come up with some metadata and a title that makes it findable? Those are the gaps that AI is helping us with.
That's so important. And it's exciting to hear that you're thinking about that, because I know with a lot of the search projects we've had, it's funny, we were working with a very large insurance company once, and the first task they did is they said, we've got to fix our search. So they looked at the top 20 search terms and said, what is the right answer? And they would go find the document. And John, just in boosting certain results and changing the title, they tripled their performance. It was just so much better. Now, what you're telling me is, as opposed to making that a manual process, you all have invested in some NLP that says, okay, here's what this large document is, and here's what they wrote as the title, but based on the corpus of information we're looking at, here's what the title should be, and here's what would be really valuable. And that's neat to see. So is that, am I hearing you right?
At 100%. That's exactly it, is that findability starts with the content that you find in sort of poor condition, all right, in some cases. So we have to recognize that and not beat up on the authors that much. They're focused on writing good content and haven't really been trained in what it takes to have it findable, or maybe necessarily, you know, even know that other synonyms or terms that you should think of that people would be using to find that document. Another example of NLP is the idea that search engines are traditionally designed to find documents. So you go, here's a document, and a bunch of them, they're all 10, 20 pages. And you type a search, what you want is an answer sometimes. Here's the specific question I have to this, and I want to answer. Well, not only will it not dig that answer out of that document, it won't even bring that document up because it's not relevant specifically to that document, but inside that document is the answer to your question. So what have people done traditionally? They said, okay, you want a document? We'll give you a document. We'll create a whole bunch of FAQ documents. We'll manually work around this technology and say, all right, here's a document. The title is going to be the question people ask. And the only thing in this document is going to be that answer, and that'll make it work. And that's basically the workaround strategy of manually producing FAQs. All kinds of problems with it getting out of sync of the larger document these snippets came from and so forth. So what we have now is what we call smart FAQs. Basically, instead of manually creating FAQs, the NLP can dig specific answers or factual information out of large documents and return those with search results as well. So when you ask a question, you get a short list of FAQ, or an answer, the question is generated that matches the answers that it's finding, so it can sync up the question and answer and pull the answer right out of large documents.
Love that. So it's almost like the Google search experience where you see often some search results and then there's a list of common questions that they answer based on the results, which, as you said, you know, it's funny, when we meet with our clients, we don't say this right up front because it would be daunting, but once they get to know us and we're helping them with KM, we say, one of your stovepipes, one of your silos is documents. They're bad for KM. They're bad for getting people answers. And so we're often on the front end saying, here, let's teach you componentized content management. Let's teach you how to break this apart. But what you're saying is, as opposed to even forcing some of that, you're just saying, we're going to fix it on the fly with the search engine, and that's where you're investing your time and money, so that organizations that haven't advanced beyond documents are going to be okay and still get a really compelling search.
Yeah, and I like that term, a compelling search, because I like quotes. Thomas Sowell has a great quote that there are no solutions, there is only trade-offs. Yeah. And once you get that in your head, you realize, okay, what's a compelling search? Well, would you have better results with 20 or 30 PhDs on your staff manually putting taxonomies and synonyms in place and everything, or using an automated, completely automated approach? You're probably going to get better results if you put a whole lot of effort and energy and time and money into manually doing some things. Is there a trade-off to be made that you can go a long way down that path by automatically producing a lot of extra synonyms, metadata, and everything to help search work with just the technology? Absolutely. And so that trade-off is one that people are willing to make, not just from investment, but it's just the time. You go into a place and realize, gee, there's 5,000 documents without a title. How long would that take, even if you had the manpower to just say, we're going to go and try to make this make sense, versus just ingest it the way you would any other document, and on the way in, let it look through and go, I can get an idea of a summary of this document and as a description, I can get an idea of probably the title, and let the AI do that and put it in place on the way in.
You know, many of these internal projects where you're mining the company information, they have tremendous intrinsic value, but it's not always easy to say, here's the ROI. And it sounds like what you're trying to do is say, hey, I'm going to lower the cost of making this better because you can't afford it otherwise. And I'm going to give you that experience that if you had unlimited funds, you might build yourself, but I'm going to do it through automation. Is that?
That's a good summary, and it's a trade-off people are excited about, because otherwise you're left with two extremes. You have, on the one hand, documents that aren't findable, or the other hand, you know, you would have a large cost and time element in manually doing something. So the question is, what can be done automatically? Is it acceptable? Has it reached a point? And I give examples in my presentations. You mentioned Google Results is now doing this. They're bringing up some FAQs first before you get to the links and documents where they're pulling factual information out of the content they're finding. And I give examples where you can see where the automated question that it's generating is not the best proper English. And it's not the way you would write it, but you know what it means. And that's the trade-off that Google's willing to make, a trade-off of, I'm getting to the content. Is it 100% accurate the way that the grammar that I use to generate the question, you can read it and know that that's what this is, or should we just not even implement this at all? Is the trade-off there? And Google found that it is, and we've found that with clients, well, at Search Blocks. At Search Blocks, when you use this technology, of course, you would implement it on your content and then be able to edit it. So even if the AI is sort of generating questions is not exactly proper grammar, you can go in and edit it at that point as well. So you can still add, you know, the human in the loop to that technology.
Oh, excellent. So you're creating, you've got a little interface where all of the FAQs you've dynamically built are accessible and editable and buildable. So you can have that augmented human in the loop, right?
I think that's the trade-off. You know, 100% human or 100% AI is probably not where we want to be, at least right now. Think about people driving cars. You know, they have a capability for it to take over, but usually they want to know that your hand's on the steering wheel, right? So what's that trade-off and the balance there? And I think that's how we're approaching this, that the balance is there to find that trade-off solution. And that's when it reaches that level of technology that it's acceptable with some edits here and there, then it's a much better experience for the search journey. You're finding what you're looking for, whether the document or a specific answer in a document, than not having that.
So it really is augmented, but allowing people to control it to make it even better. That's a good story. So you're bringing Google Search internal.
You can think of it that way. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that aspect of it, sure.
So now stepping back, now that we've kind of learned about your product, you know, our listeners can say, okay, this is how it might fit for me. I'm actually going to ask that question. Where is this being used? Who's installing Search Blocks? Is this happening for public sites where B2B businesses are trying to understand each other? Are you doing it for intranets? What's your most common use cases and who's buying Search Blocks in that way?
Yeah, sort of all across the board. I mean, whether it's in call centers or e-commerce or just a basic website, we're seeing that as far as our customers, we tend to focus in financial services, healthcare, government and technology sectors. We have some outside of that, starting to build up more customers like in education related things. But in general, those are the four areas that we focus in as far as business sectors. But it really comes down to the business case they're looking for. So it's not just the sector, it's the person in the company saying, I have a problem. I want to sell more products. And people can't find the answer. So when you think of maybe a marketing funnel, and you're at the very top, you just have some questions, you're not ready to call someone, no one really take that call. I have a basic question about should this work, how would I compare it? And if you can't get that answer, you go to another website. Or if you do get to the point where you have a specific question, and then that's a call into a call center. So from the standpoint of like who's interested right now, especially with the economy, I mean, people are interested in these kinds of technologies because they solve business problems beyond this sort of idea of what is a search journey. That's a great topic. I love to talk about that. But these are real business decisions because they're business solutions.
So, John, we talked before we got here. You've been in this space for probably as many years as I have. And one of the things I love when I speak to kind of the people that are the vision behind a lot of these types of products is they're always thinking what's next. And I guess the question for me to you is, what's next in KM? What are you envisioning either for Search Blocks or even beyond that? It might be two steps away. You know, this doesn't have to be on your roadmap, but what are we going to do that's going to make KM even easier in the future and from a technology standpoint and just take things to the next level?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I'm sure that every company is thinking about their roadmap and answering that, not just the list, but the order that they're going about that. So I'm not going to go into the whole roadmap, but something that we can share at the conference is one of our upcoming features that's going to be added next is what we're calling smart synonyms. Given this idea of gaps, same type of idea there. You can either manually go in and say, when you see T-E-N, make it also find 10. Okay, and there's many examples. And this list of synonyms changes like per domain, like in different, you know, pharmaceutical versus something else. They have names, terms that they use, that if someone asks for it this way, also find it if it's in the document this other way, a list of synonyms. So that's an area now where you either have nothing or you have a manual list that you have to create. Or if you want something better than that, you have an entire taxonomy structure, which is powerful because it kind of goes beyond just the related terms. It gives you sort of the related concept that it's related to. A lot of manual labor, a lot of time to do that correctly. So is there a trade-off in all of that? And there is, using NLP, looking through your content on the way in across all documents, creating a smart synonym list of finding the documents, even if you call it something else.
Good. So you're seeing continued automation and solving some of the, it sounds like there's a real focus on, let's solve that manual problem we've been doing in the past to curate information so that search will work. Let's automate that as much as possible. If needed, kind of put a human in the loop so that you can validate and own it, but still just over and over make it easier to get this done so search is plug and play.
That's exactly it, finding the gaps and finding a reasonable trade-off. So again, this isn't something that's going to, you know, remove the need for taxonomists or people that have that level of findability and sophistication in their documents. This fills a gap for people who don't have the budget for that and don't have the time for that, but are living with without any of that, even some of it automated. So again, it's about the trade-off. This is going to go a long way of bringing in similar terms and some concepts with it that it picks up, that it understands as part of a concept. So we can start to do some of this in an automated way now as well.
Wonderful. Well, John, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking some time away from the conference and your booth to come chat with us here, and looking forward to our listeners hearing more about Search Blocks, and please feel free to share it with your users as we go forward. But thank you again.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Well, hello, listeners. This is Joe Hilger, live here at KM World. Excited to talk to you about some of the vendors we have here. And today I'm meeting with Walt Mayo from Expert AI. Walt, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
First of all, thank you very much for having me this morning. Great to be here at KM World. I'm the CEO of Expert.ai, joined about 2.5 years ago, and extraordinarily excited about the dynamic that is emerging around knowledge management and AI, where we really see our ability to add value.
Great. You know, Walt, I've known your product for years and always been impressed with it, especially I love the AI and graph components about it. But rather than me talking about, can you give a quick pitch to our listeners?
Happy to do that. And to my earlier point, in talking about knowledge management and AI, in many ways, knowledge management was the precursor to AI. What we've seen emerge, though, in particular over the last 5 years, has been a tremendous amount of excitement around one particular approach to language-based knowledge management or artificial intelligence. And that's the whole machine learning, deep learning approach. And that's been powered by a lot of things: cheaper storage, which gives you more data, higher compute power, as well as models that have emerged that excited some attention, most particularly this form of model called a transformer. So with all of that, what we also recognize is that language is a uniquely complex form of data. And the knowledge that you seek to extract from language is hidden. In the words of G.K. Chesterton, its wildness lies in wait. Another great quote is from the linguist R.J. Firth, and he said, "You shall know a word by the company it keeps." And that ambiguity is very, very hard for pure machine learning approaches to solve. It's trying to use mathematical approaches to predict the meaning of words. This is what distinguishes us. It's our foundation, was around what's called a symbolic or knowledge-based approach. And that is actually embedding and representing the meanings and the relationships and the concepts associated with words. And then doing the same at a domain level for the vocabulary that's relevant across a given vertical. I was just talking to someone from the U.S. government, and I can assure you the language of the U.S. government is entirely different than what you would typically see. And so with all of that, we bring the two together, which is machine learning and symbolic approaches, and we get the best of both worlds, knowledge from our approach and the learning that machine learning offers. That's what really distinguishes it in one integrated platform to handle language as a form of data.
Some things I like that you said there, you really are text analytics on steroids, right? Because of context, you don't just identify people, places, and things, you understand what they are. So if someone talks about arms, you'll understand whether they're talking about someone's physical arms or weapons in that example.
That's to my earlier point. Yeah, exactly.
And context drives that, doesn't it?
And we talk about that in the AI world typically as inference, the ability to make an abstraction that is reasonably well-founded. And the combination of a knowledge-based approach and machine learning really, really improves your ability to do that. There's other real world advantages as well. One of the two characteristics of machine learning approaches, which to be clear, have marvelous applications in a whole variety of different domains, particularly with structured data. But two of the real challenges is the amount of data required for a machine learning model to try to absorb through repeated training, the context of the language that you seek is very, very high. That's very time consuming. And then you have the added element, the more domain dense it is, the more likely you're going to have to turn to one of your specialists who's probably would rather do something else besides labeling data, right? So that's one. The other is the complexity of the models is so high, that brings a lot of challenges. So they're very compute intensive. Amazon loves them for obvious reasons, because they typically run on GPUs. That has some real implications as well for things like carbon footprint. And then related to that, that very complexity that requires so much power makes it very difficult to understand or explain the outcomes that you're driving. And so our approach, we basically can use a lot more efficient, a lot more explainable approaches to knowledge management and AI.
We're deep in this, so this all makes great sense to me. But for some of our listeners, they might say, okay, I've heard what this is, but what do I use it for? What are some use cases that I could take advantage of?
Fair enough. So two ways to think about it in any organization, in any business, and you start with where is language flowing through my enterprise? And with just a little bit of distance, you start to realize, oh my goodness, it's everywhere. It's pervasive. It's ubiquitous. It's how we understand the world around us. It's how people communicate about our products, goods, and services. There are processes that are heavily language dependent that are flowing through your organization. Just get that first kind of little bit of objectivity, and I think it'll open your eyes a bit. Next step, think about language as just another form of data. With that, say, if I could extract the relevant information in the data, what could I do better? What decisions could I make better? Easy way to do that is, where are important data elements that are expressed in language that are routinely challenging to find, right? And they tend to fall into two categories. One is where the language is very complex, and as a result, you typically have to have experts interpret the language. And the reason you do that typically is because accuracy is important, because mistakes are costly. So you have to have a lawyer read a contract. Look at those processes and say, what if I could do that faster? What if I could do that more consistently? And then obviously I could probably save some money and make fewer mistakes that might be costly. So complexity, that one domain of language representation. The other is a volume domain, right? Where the problem is not the complexity, it's just that there is so much, it's impractical to have people reading it. And you think about a financial analyst trying to go through all of the information that's provided about a variety of different companies out. That whole knowledge navigation guided by complexity and volume. The other I would put into the category of kind of process automation. So there's been a lot of work done with robotic process automation, and initially started with companies like UiPath, Automation Anywhere, Blue Prism, and initially started with simplifying pretty basic processes where there's clearly overlap and inefficiencies in the processes. If you think about any process that involves a human being spending meaningful time in a repeatable way trying to manage language data, that's an opportunity for our technology to come to bear. So you could think about insurance, for example. Hundreds of people going through medical claims or going through policies, and they're looking for the critical elements that enable them to make appropriate decisions. So you wouldn't necessarily think about insurance as a vertical that is ripe for AI, natural language understanding. And then, of course, in the knowledge management world, any company whose business model is powered by language in information services, it's critical that they have the infrastructure and the technology to enable them to do that faster and more repeatably so that they can monetize the language that powers their business.
It's funny, you differentiated the two. The two descriptions you gave me are both knowledge management in my mind.
There you are.
Right? In both cases, we're taking lots of information and trying to distill it and getting the right information to the right people at the right time. And we have that mass of information. As you said, you have both complexity and you have size and vastness of it. The ability to do that and process that way is probably save millions of dollars.
No question. And that's where I think the good work that you all do at Enterprise Knowledge is you come in and you get people to rethink language as data in their enterprise, taking that first step back that I mentioned to you and say, you know, where is the knowledge in your enterprise that enables you to compete and win more effectively? And if you boil it all down, it's pretty foundational. If you were to say that a company accesses the knowledge available to it and routinely makes better decisions than its competitors, you would say, well, they're likely going to do fairly well.
A little bit of good to great there, I think.
There you go.
In that description, I like that a lot. So how's the conference been for you?
Fantastic, although to be completely candid, I just arrived, so I have not.
Talking to your team, well, they've been all over the place.
They have been, yeah. We're longtime participants in KM World.
Yeah, we've seen your year with that little COVID gap that we just all went through.
But we all went through.
Good to see the whole crew back here. So
thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you, Walt.
You bet. Take care.
You too.